It's few days to what many have described as the most important election in Nigeria. It is the 2023 general election. However, there are still unsolved national issues to be dealt with even as we head for the polls. What should be done and what is the fate of many Nigerians with the current state of the nation? All these and more is what I dealt with my guest on this week's episode of The Insider and the person of Adeyemi Oban. Listen and enjoy.
So good day, Oban. Thank you for joining me on this episode of The Insider this week. So we just want to take a look concerning Nigeria, taking a look at Nigeria again. Election in some few days because it's just a matter
about 12 days. Yeah.
Yes, before the election comes in. But there are still certain issues to consider as a whole. There are problems that we're still trying to sort out even before we, you know, transit into a new administration. But first, let me get your... Yes, I have a list of them in my table. But first of all, what do you think are the problems that we're facing right now that may be a huge hindrance for the next administration, even in the future too?
Thank you, Kay, for having me. Right now, majorly, what we should concern ourselves about are two things. You get two major things, the two major responsibilities of any administration you get. So that's what we are expecting from the next administration. As this administration is wrapping up, we are expecting a very standard economy. But before economy, we'll have to talk about security. You get, if you tick off that box of security, then we can now talk about economy. If any administration, even under the Section 20 of Nigerian law, if any administration failed to provide with these two things, that's security and a good economy, stable economy, then, I mean, what's the point of calling you a government? So this is what we expect from this administration to hand over to the next administration safely. You get a good architecture, a good security architecture to hand it over to the next administration. But then again, you had that is there, you can't give what you don't have. So is there anything on ground that this administration is having as an at their hand right now that they would like to give to the next administration? Or the next administration, be you whoever it is that's coming in next, are you inheriting, what are you inheriting from the current administration?
Before we delve into the details of what is to be handed over to the next administration, I want to ask, what makes a nation works?
Well, the people makes a nation work. Some people argue that it's the leaders, but I will tell you that it's the people, because it is from the people that will produce good leaders. Good people will produce good leaders. So you get, so if we don't have good people, we can't produce good leaders. We are just a mirror, reflection of our leaders. Some people will even say we deserve our leaders, because that's exactly
the people
you get. So that's what makes a nation work. It's good people that you don't have to water run. They know what to do. They know what is right. They know what is wrong. They know what is logical. You get, they know what is best for the country. They know what is best for their neighbors, for people next to them. You get, so good people, then we can now talk about good leaders and principles guiding the country.
So are Nigerians good people?
Absolutely not. I don't think so. We like to get away with things. Our mindset is totally flawed. You get, even a newborn baby, fresh, clean, I mean, coming to this world on a clean slate, it's just a matter of weeks or months or a year before the mind is corrupt as well. So I don't think so. A lot of people will argue that what we need is restructuring, go back to the old ways of Western region and blah blah blah. But nobody is talking about the restructuring of the mind, the mindset. You get, have a very better mindset towards how the society should work, how Nigeria should work. Nigerians, we lack that. As long as we continue this way, I won't call Nigerians good people until we restructure, we have a better mindset, we have better orientation.
So what caused this anomaly? What brought about this idea that we are not good? What brought about the decay in mindset?
Yes, I think over the years, it's just about normalizing bad thing. You get, over the years, you do it, I do it, the other person in the room is doing it.
And so just before you go on, so can we blame our institution for not upholding the things that will ensure that people do the right thing?
Of course, it's because when you do it, you are able to get away with it. When I also am able to get away with it, the next person who feel if black can do it, if A can do it, B can do it, maybe I can do it too and get away with it. And before you know it, it's a normal thing. It will become a normal thing you get that people can now do and get away with it. Look at the fraud boys, for example, better known as Yahoo boys, you get. When I was growing up back in the early 90s, late 80s, you are a bad example. They used to call it 419 then. There's nothing like Yahoo boys. They used to call it 419 then. And in 91, 92, they would tell you at primary school then, they would tell you that you should read your books, home economics, social science, math, English. So you don't be that 419 bros, that Egmo that is making money as a 419, as a fraudster. Bad example. Now they are like role models because they can get away with it. That's the point I'm trying to make. So if they can do it, they are glorified, they are being celebrated, and they often get away with different financial crimes. Now you want to grow up and do it, the next person will want to do it also. I think that's the major issue, because people are doing it, people are getting away with it. So I think that's it.
So I'd like to link this now to the judiciary.
Okay.
Now our judiciary has been designed, was set up to handle issues like this, to ensure that justice has been served, to err people on the side of caution, and to ensure that whoever, you know, breaks the edge, the serpent will bite, as it is said. Because if you have a law, it means that you should uphold the law. So does that mean our judicial systems and institutions is not strong enough to handle this? Because when we talk about fraud, we also see it at the upper level, at the federal level,
of course,
beyond our normal immediate life cycle.
Of course,
we see it at the upper level where people just get away with corruption. It's obvious that this person did something sort of that we can term as a corrupt act, but it seems to get away and in fact being celebrated. Now does that mean that our judiciary in Nigeria is not doing its role?
The beautiful thing about judiciary, about laws in Nigeria, is that where you think you've locked it, there is another law that will open it for you. You get, it's just a matter of if you are paying your lawyers right to find that flaw, to find that clause that will help you get away with things. You get the point I'm trying to make is if our law is strict on corruption, financial crimes and all that stuff, if it is strict enough, if there is no loose end, there won't be room for lawyers to tamper with this thing, make people, even at our politicians, our leaders, the executive and all that, to get away with financial crimes. You get, but it is because they know that there is always a law. Let me give an example of plea bargaining. There is a plea bargaining that allows you to steal as much money as you can, and you get the plea bargain. There's presidential pardon that allows you to steal as much as possible. Then you get the presidential pardon. If I am allowed to mention names, look at Jolly Yame,
I saw
look
that
at Joshua Darie, and many more. I can go on and mention name of former governors, politicians that already benefited from this plea bargain and presidential pardon and all of that stuff. Look at what happened with Fanny Kayode, the former aviation minister. I can go on and on. I can in fact, I can spend the whole day naming names of politicians, public holders that in one way or the other benefited from this plea bargain and presidential pardon, which is not illegal. You get, plea bargain is not illegal, presidential pardon is not illegal. So the point I'm trying to make is there are laws that allows this to, that's the dynamic of our law in Nigeria. It's not strict enough, you get, to make sure that once you do this thing and you're found guilty, there's an investigation that confirms it, that you are guilty of it, you should serve a punishment. There shouldn't be a backdoor. But because we are all aware that there is backdoor, there are loose ends to this thing, people get away with it.
That on one side, we'll still get to that. Now talking about the national issue that we have to solve before we get there, corruption is one major issue we have in our country, and this corruption is something that most democratic government in their campaigns will campaign with. We will come, we'll fight corruption, especially this current administration. They specifically told us that he's a minister, no-nonsense person, he will fight corruption. But in the 8 years, I think we can all agree that corruption has not died, has not reduced. If we can say it has increased, what's the way forward as solving the issue of corruption?
I think corruption is relative. It's relative in the sense that what you will regard as corruption depends on the people involved. I might not see it that way, you get, if you are my person, you get, I might say, well, it's not corruption, it's just trying
paddy
kind of thing. So corruption is relative. If you are looking at the 2014 manifesto of President Buhari, and inside that manifesto, there's this huge, a long paragraph about fighting corruption, that, oh, we are here in Nigeria because of corruption. But here we are, 7.5 years after, we are still battling corruption in different sectors, different MDAs, you get. And it is not about the corruption itself, it's about the people involved in the corruption. So if you are someone that can be overlooked for, then you'll be exposed, you get. If it is someone that they can look the other side for you, then you won't be exposed, you get. And I can give examples of this. What some people will do, and they won't get away with it. Some people will get away with it. Different allegations, you get. Something
Something
as fake certificate, you get. You see what happened to Kemi Adeosun. You see similar thing, or should I say almost the same thing, happened to Barrister Adebayoshi too. We know where Kemi Adeosun is right now, you get. And we know what happened to Barrister Shitu, you get. Barrister Shitu finished his tenure as the minister for the first 4 years of President Buhari as a minister, but Kemi Adeosun didn't even use up to 2 years. They both had the same case of certificate forgery, certificates, whatever word you want to use for it. But you see, I'm just using a clear example of what you would define as corruption. And there are corruptions that involves money also. You remember the MPA boss, Aji Adiza?
So the NDDC one too?
Yes. So I can go on and on. I'm very sorry. I mean, this is what I do. So I am full of examples comparing the present with the past. That's how I do my analysis. So I can go on and on with Aji Adiza, the former MPA boss. You see what happened to her. Then the new MPA boss that came in after her. You see what also happened. Something similar, but they let go of one, they sustain one, you get. So something like this. So corruption is just a matter of the people involved. That's why I said corruption is relative. What you will say is a corruption, I might say no, it's not corruption.
But at the national level, is it corruption? All of those things you just mentioned,
of course they are corruption. You know the symbol of just when you go to court, you know that symbol, that statue in front of Odin sword and scale with the blindfold, you get. The meaning of that blindfold in law is that I'm not seeing you regardless of who you are. I'm holding sword as punishment and I'm holding balance, you get. That's the meaning of that symbol. So the blindfold means I don't know who you are. If you are tall, if you are short, if you are light skinned, whatever it is you are, whatever it is you look like, I don't see you. That's the meaning, that justice shouldn't see who you are, your status, you get. If you are involved in corruption, it shouldn't matter your relationship with the who is who of Nigeria, or who you are, or your position, your political reference or status, you get. That's how it should be, regardless.
I'm trying to build a connection right now. So we know, started off with the institution. You made mention of people, the institution, and let's not forget that the people make up the institution. Can we all agree to that?
Of course.
And people make up the institution, and we need the institution to uphold justice, to ensure that law is being served. So which means that, looking at the examples I'm giving now, has created a complex, my friend would call it a complex compound problem, where you have the people that make up the institution, but the institution itself cannot take care of itself, because the institution now needs another institution
to check it.
And that institution also has its own people that also have a problem in it, that's to check it. So who creates the balance in all of this?
Man. Because once there is an institution, and there is also another institution to check that institution, and unfortunately, that institution that's supposed to check the institution is also being checked. I mean, it's a ripple effect. The corruption will just keep lingering on and on like that. For example, let's look at the police, the police in Nigeria, as an example. A lot of people will tell you that police in Nigeria, there is a lot of corruption going on in police, in Nigerian police sector. But there is police commission. Is not actually part of Nigerian police force. Police commission is supposed to be independent, to checkmate what is going on in police force. Well, they don't call them force anymore. But now there is another problem with police commission. People are now suggesting that there should be another body to checkmate the police commission also, because there are some things going on in police commission that is not fine. So now we have the police that is supposed to check the police being checked by another police also. So it's a ripple effect that at some point we have to have another police for that one also. It doesn't make any sense. We can't continue like that. The only solution I can suggest is if we have a standard policy, standard regulation, and a strict one, there won't be people checking the mistake, the error, and the imbalances of others. Once there is rules and regulation, people should just follow through. If you are not following through, you have people monitoring and reporting you, then there will be penalty, there will be punishment. You will be the scapegoat. And that's it. There is no agency checking, agency checking agencies.
So which brings me to the question of constitution.
Okay.
So do you think that our constitution has made enough efforts in the details of it all to ensure that all of these things are even working?
Well, our constitution also, it is flawed. There are a lot of things. Well, that's the job of lawmakers. If they are not on holiday, which most times they are on holiday, that's their job to make sure that our constitution is being worked on to make it more robust for the country and the people living in the country. Our constitution is supposed to safeguard. You remember that this constitution that we are talking about in 1998, I do remember that this constitution in 1998 was actually written by the military. And in 1999, after the election, that's Third Republic, Baba Obasanjo took that constitution and we moved on. Like, we started our democracy from there on, you get. And here we are in 2023 with the 1999 constitution written by the 1999 constitution that Baba Obasanjo
received
from military, you get. So there are a lot of things that it's not democratic. It doesn't work exactly that way, you get. Especially with the way things are changing, the world is changing, people are getting wiser and all that stuff. So that's the job of our lawmakers, to make sure that the constitution is perfect enough to cover all areas.
So in this administration, under this administration, they've had to review the constitution, which was transmitted to the State Houses of Assembly, but now it has not been implemented. Why? Because there's still some dark areas. For example, for some states, state policing matters to them, and the Joint House of Assembly have not said anything about that. There's the issue of local government autonomy. They sent the House of Assembly as a center to it, but State Houses of Assembly have not done anything to it, which means that there's a problem in ensuring that our National Assembly and our different State Houses of Assembly meet at a compromise. So how do we connect this two together? Not leaving out the National Assembly also, I just want to also put it in context as a whole together. The Constitution also, I want to first ask also, the National Assembly, especially this ninth, do you think that they've done a good job in doing their job as lawmakers? And secondly, how do we connect State House of Assembly together to align with the Joint House of Assembly?
Okay, in 1958, may God rest his soul, the first CONAD, well, jointly by other people, Chief Buddy Thomas, joined by Chief Williams. I'm talking about Remy, the father of Fanikayode that I mentioned earlier. Femi Fanikayode is the son. The father, Remy Fanikayode, in 1958, he was the one that started this whole assembly, the whole National Assembly. The point I'm trying to make by going back in history to 1958 is that if Remy Fanikayode, if he's able, if he can come alive now to see what is happening with our National Assembly, he will weep that this is not the idea of this National Assembly, that this is not what is supposed to happen with National Assembly. Remember that Remy was the first deputy premier then. So he did a lot of things. But what the idea of National Assembly then is not what we have now. And I remember, I think, was it earlier this year or late last year, maybe around December? I can't remember correctly. But I remember that Dajabi Amila, the speaker, said something about the National Assembly and the State Assembly, that they are opposite each other, you get, which is a lot of problem, because there are some laws that National Assembly will stand on, but when it gets to states, the states will just throw it away. And you know that states' law, they are particular to the people, they are more closer to the people. If State Assembly are saying no to something, it will affect people more than National Assembly. Like the examples you gave, the local government autonomy, the state policing, and many more. So if State Assembly are saying no, but the National Assembly is saying yes to it, it will affect people, because the State Assembly are not in sync with National Assembly, which is a sad thing. And I hope we resolve this. We have better relationship and better understanding between the State Assembly and the National Assembly moving forward.
I want to balance this also. You've made a good suggestion, but doesn't it now then mean that we really need restructuring? Because I'm thinking someone is in Abuja making laws for someone in Ibadan. And so maybe a lawmaker in your state, for example, is thinking it's not possible that you be in Abuja and you make loss for me. I'm here in Oyo State. I see my people more.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't that then mean that we really need restructuring?
In 2012, do you remember the national conference called CONFAB? This and many other things at the end of the whole CONFAB during Goodluck Jonathan's regime. This is what they talked about, the whole restructuring, so that we can have things working in your environment, in your state, in your local government. Let me start from local government, in your ward, in your local government, in your state, by the people in your local government, in your state, not that it's from the above, something more practical, close to home. So we are going to go back to CONFAB. Why? Because things are not working the way it should. If things are working the way it's supposed to work, we won't be needing restructuring.
So can't we just go back to the one we had before? Can't we just make use of the one and recommendations from the ones we had before?
That's because administration is supposed to be, government is supposed to be continual. But it's because the last administration, CONFAB is from them. And this administration, they don't want to, because we will keep saying that, oh, it is CONFAB, it is Goodluck Jonathan's CONFAB now. You get that you are able to achieve all this from Goodluck Jonathan's CONFAB. So they don't want to continue with that. And they don't want to start their own.
Could it be political?
Of course, definitely. There is a political undertone to it. Because in the beginning, there is this committee set up by the president. And El Rufai, the Kaduna State governor, was the chairman of restructuring. And all of a sudden, nothing happened after that because they don't want to continue with the whole CONFAB, the 2012 CONFAB conversation. You get, so if things are not working the way it's supposed to work, which that's supposed to be the alternative, if you are not going to do the restructuring, then things should work as it should be. There shouldn't be decentralization between the federal and the state government. You get, so if things are not working, everything is not in sync, the federal, state and the local government, they are not in sync, and we the people we are the ones suffering from it. So that is why we are talking about restructuring. If things are in sync at state, at local and federal government, there won't be need for restructuring.
So which one do you think will work? That will go back to our regionalism, or that we find a way to connect this level of government together?
As long as there are different political parties with different ideologies, with different manifestos, I don't think this federalism, this federal, state, local government, I don't think they will be in sync. You get, because they will tell you that, states will tell you that it is not in line with the manifesto of our party. What we stand on, this thing you are talking about at federal level, is not in line with what we do here. You get, so there will always be back and forth, there will always be argument, unless we have the region. If we go back to region, it has worked before, so hopefully it will still work if we go back then to that. You get, not fully, but at least partially, to some certain level. You get, if we are not doing that, then we will need to work on how the federal, state and local government will have to work together.
Still putting the discussion in perspective, addressing the national issues before the election, and linking it to restructuring, linking it to this agitation. I think we can all agree that this administration has saw more of agitators, especially in the last 6 years. You know, it started off with the Fema Ada crisis, where the Yoruba Nation began to spring up. We started seeing people like Nnamdi Kanu rising up from somewhere in Anambra, saying enough is enough, we feel like we're not represented enough, and that spilled and went on and went on till we got to the point where we now had the Middle Belt Forum, and everybody's claiming that no, let us go our way, let us not do this anymore, let us find a way to, let's seek referendum, it doesn't look like we are united, it feels more like a certain ethnic group is the one ruling over us, and so many arguments like that, which also brought about the issue of restructuring and all of that, which, if we can put it as in context, the unity of the nation. I think we cannot agree that unity of the nation is at stake at this moment. Okay, so first thing, what led us here, and secondly, what do we need to do to address the situation?
I think the sense of inclusion is what led us here. Some part of Nigeria, some tribes, some people, they believe that they are not being carried along, they are not enjoying enough of Nigeria, that some certain people are enjoying too much of Nigeria than them. Are they more Nigerian than us? And that conversation, they feel betrayed and cheated. You get, which is a terrible thing, because how do you console someone that is betrayed and cheated? You get, it's a very sensitive thing. That explains it. And more reason why this, I think the next presidency should go to the south, blah, blah, blah. Oh, Igbo president, it's time for Igbo president and all that stuff. People feel that way, that the power is too much in some certain level. I remember we discussed something about censors, me and you, off this podcast. Yes. About census in 2006, that the number of people in the north, it's an edge for them to get, it's a huge advantage for them over others because of their numbers, because they are more that they have more population, they have more numbers than other part of Nigeria. You get, so this will make others feel that they are not being carried along. The sense of inclusion, it is something you can't, I don't know how to console someone. I don't know. It's a very dicey one.
So how do we move on? And is it possible that we can eventually get a Nigeria that will be united, where everyone feels included?
Okay, thank you. There's something in our constitution. There's something called federal character. Federal character means there should be inclusion. As long as you are a Nigerian, you are entitled to everything. You get, you are entitled to what an Hausa or Igbo is entitled to, even as a Yoruba man. As a Yoruba man, you are entitled to what Hausa and Igbo is getting. You get a federal character. So that's why you see at in federal secretariat, you see Hausas working there. Federal secretariat here in Ibadan, you see Hausas working there. You see Igbos working there. You see Yorubas working there. Federal secretariat in maybe Enugu or Port Harcourt, you see Yorubas working there. You see Hausas working there. It is part of federal character that everybody should get the benefits. You get federal schools. They will tell you it is open to all. Everybody is getting admission and blah, blah, blah. But there's nothing like federal character when it comes to politics. And that's where it starts. There is nothing like federal character in politics. You can't tell me that all these ones that we are saying that, the Igbos, they are being left out, they deserve to be president. It is not written. It's just a gentleman agreement. It's just a logical discussion. Mm. It is not in the law. After 8 years of the President Buhari, if Hausa man wins the next election, it is allowed. After this, if the next president is not an Igbo, it is allowed, because there was no law saying that there should be rotation. No, absolutely no law. It's just a logical discussion. And politics is powerful. We often forget that we only focus on governance. We often forget about politics. You get that politics, in a lot of times, in different instances, politics often influence governance. You get, we are being hypocrite by saying, our governance, we have federal character, that one is solid. You get, forgetting that in politics, it is important. So it starts from politics. Look at all these things we are doing. Election, campaigning, and blah, blah, blah. It's part of politics. In democracy, it is allowed. Politics is important in democracy. We can't talk about democracy without talking about politics. In fact, part of the things that makes democracy is politics. So if we are saying federal character in governance and we are not talking about it in politics, we are actually deceiving ourselves. So to answer your question, the solution is we need to start talking about this unity, this inclusion, this federal character in politics. We have to make it a rule, a law, so that all political parties will have it in their party law. You get that there should be rotation, there should be inclusion, there should be fair play, fair game to everyone in their party. So as long as we don't have that, and anything goes in politics, then it will affect the way we are running our governance.
So let's move on quickly. Economy. Economy is a major problem. It's one of the many many unsolved national issues we are dealing currently with. And it's one of the major things this current administration also promised on, that the economy will make sense. Part of his people told us that 1 naira will equal to $1 and they'll be feeding, fuel will go back to normal, all of those promises. Well, it looks more and more every day that the economy is crumbling and people can't get enough out of the economy. So first of all, what led us here in the first place? Beyond the promises, we had promises. What do you think happened to those promises? And what is the current reality right now? And what do we need to do to solve the economy? Because as it is now, even all the candidates are campaigning on the issue of economy. that we were going to bring up economy will be robust, we'll go from consumption to production, privatization, I will build more industries and all of those promises. But let's understand what led us in the first place and what is the solution as far as the economy is concerned, because it's like we'll be battling it and it's never ending. So
I am not a financial expert. I have associate degree in journalism, not in economics or finances. But it doesn't take a genius to understand that the economy of Nigeria, it is because Nigeria, we depend so much on oil, crude oil. Our economy relies so much on this crude oil. That's where we generate our revenue, our livelihood, our means of living. You get this crude oil. So if anything happens to our crude oil, we are in trouble. The whole country, the economy of the whole country will be in trouble. Currently, over 70 trillion debt. We are in this debt because of our oil sector. We can trace this debt literally back to our oil sector. So if you talk about Nigeria's economy, then we have to talk about our oil sector. You get? So let's look at what is going on in our oil sector. We are selling crude oil. We are importing petrol. That is why we are here. We don't have our own refinery working for us. So we are not in control of what is going on with our petrol. If we have our refinery working, then we can be in control of our petrol here. But we don't have our refineries working. You get? So we can't confidently say we can determine the price of what is going on in our oil sector. There's so much corruption going on. A lot of subsidy scam. People exporting our crude oil. You get a lot of scam going on with it. You will tell me that you are spending 4 trillion on subsidy. Meanwhile, there's another report after saying you spend 4 trillion on subsidy. There's another report of about 13 billion of subsidy scam. Remove 13 billion that you are able to retrace. That you are able to trace, please, keyword, that you are able to trace. So remove 13 billion from 4 trillion. You know how much that is. You get, so there's scam in this subsidy, and we keep borrowing money because the money we are getting at some point from oil sector is not enough to sustain our budget. You get, so we see the federal government and Ministry of Finance and CBN making policies, grasping, trying to make us still stay afloat, our head above the water. You get, so making policies that is not going to even work, just trying to do things, trying to make things better. You get, you see inflation going through the roof. You see interest rate, I think it's about 17 point something, yeah, now, yeah. 17 point something percent now. Interest rate is about 21.4%. You get? So all those things, all this trouble we have, my point is we have to trace it back to our oil sector. When was the last time that NNPC was audited? NNPC, where we rely, that's like the biggest part of our economy in Nigeria. When was the last time that NNPC was audited? So they do things and get away with it year in, year out, without accounting for our money over the years being spent. It doesn't work that way. We can't have a good economy without transparency, without good management. This is mismanagement. Economy of Nigeria is as a result of mismanagement from oil sector. That's just the statement. Economy in Nigeria right now, the dwindling, the unstable economy that we have in Nigeria right now is as a result of mismanagement of our oil sector.
So still talking on economy also, there's this new policy, the Naira redesign policy, and this whole craze for cashless policy, which of course right now is causing a lot of confusion. Looking at what has happened so far in the past weeks, Supreme Court has said there's no deadline to the use of old notes until the 15th, when we get the substantive suit. CBN has been quiet since the Supreme Court made the law, and everywhere seems quiet and everyone seems in confusion. But let's get the full picture of the Naira redesign in your own perspective, your opinion. Is this what we need now as a nation to balance the economy?
You see, when you do the right thing at the wrong time, it is as good as wrong thing. It won't make any difference because it is coming at the wrong time. It's a wrong timing. People won't even appreciate it because it's a wrong timing. If I am not okay, you can't tell me about anything else. If I am hungry, you can't tell me about, you don't preach to an hungry man. If I am hungry, it doesn't work that way. That's why you see back when Christianity was brought into the country, they came with a lot of other things to entice us, to make us calm down before they tell us about Christianity. That's how things work. You get, so you can't introduce cashless policy to Nigeria, which is the right thing, which is a good thing. I'm not disputing that. It's a good thing, but at a bad timing, you get, in a bad way. Policy is as good as its implementation. If you are talking about redesigned Naira notes and the cashless policy, you have to implement it right. You have to implement it well. You have to implement it to make people in Nigeria enjoy it. If you are doing the policy and implementing it and it is bringing frustration to the people, then it's a dead on arrival policy. This old redesigned Naira notes, there is about three trillion old Naira notes, and you are producing about 3 trillion and then 300 billion new Naira. Look at the margin between 3 trillion, 2 point something billion. You get, it doesn't make any sense. Look at the margin. It's not even up to half that margin. You want to fill it with digital banking, with transfer and POS, ATM, and all this online transaction, online mode of payment. You want to fill that margin, that void with it. But these things, we don't have good internet. We don't have good smartphones. We don't have good electricity. To make this thing work, you see bankers shutting down because for once in their life, they are having so much transaction going on at once. There's no cash to make trade. There's no cash circulating. So people are relying on bank apps to trade, to make payments. And there is so much traffic on all these bank apps, all these online transactions. And you see them crashing, failing, taking hours or even the whole day to load their apps. So you can't do that. You can't jump. You can't just introduce this redesign shortage, scarcity in redesign Naira notes and cashless policy to us without putting all these things in place. It doesn't work that way.
So let's move on to security. So security also has been a long-standing issue. In fact, that was one of the major things the this current administration also campaigned on, saying we can't continue like this, we can't continue to bomb our cities. And then but we've seen insecurity take diverse forms. We began to see bandits, you know, from Boko Haram.
Yeah, terrorists.
Then we have banditry. Then we now have some people in the southeast also.
Unknown gunmen.
Unknown gunmen in disguise and several other things. And it felt more like the government was incapacitated at some level. And yes, shout out to our military, our armed forces also. They've tried their best. They've recorded some success. But as against the casualties that we've had, we see that the casualties are more than the success they have recorded. And let's not forget also that the president, like I said, make promises to secure Nigeria. But let me get, so I don't get ahead of myself. Can we say that Nigeria is secured at this moment? One, can we say that secondly, the current administration delivered on its promise to secure Nigeria? Two, and number three, what's the current structure of insecurity right now and how best can we solve insecurity?
Okay, let me start from the first one, that is Nigeria secured at the moment? There is still a lot to be done. Of course, they are trying, just like you said, they are trying, our security operators, they are trying, but there is more because hardly will you open a newspaper every day that you won't see reports of one bomb blast, one kidnapping, one attack in different places. You get every day. I read the news a lot, you read the news a lot, and I'm sure people listening, they can testify to this. There is hardly a day you will go by checking through pages of newspaper that you won't see reports of one attack somewhere around the country. So there is more to be done. We are not secure, and like I said earlier in the beginning of this session, that one of the major things that government owe to Nigeria, in fact number one thing, is security. You get, if you build second Niger Bridge, you build Lagos Ibadan Expressway, you build museum, whatever infrastructure that you are building as an administration, I won't enjoy it. I won't enjoy the school, I won't enjoy the road, I won't enjoy the museum if I don't feel safe to go out. You get, so security is the number one thing. If I am not safe enough to go out, if the road is smooth, I won't even want to take my car to drive on it, no matter how smooth it is. But I'm not safe. Lagos Ibadan Expressway, if it is smooth and free, there's no portal, it is perfect, but there are people on the road, the unknown government kidnapping people, do you think I want to enjoy that road knowing that it is not safe, that somewhere along the road there are bandits there, on unknown government? You get, I won't. This Ijebu, Ibadan Ijebu route, this Idi Anyure route going to Ijebu, there are several reports of kidnapping going on there. No matter how smooth that road is, no matter how perfectly done it is, you give it to Julius Baer, you give it to whatever, world best construction company, you get, if it is perfectly done, I won't take that route knowing that kidnappers are there. So infrastructure is by the way if the country is not secure. So
infrastructure is by the way.
If the country country is not safe, if the country is not secure. So I want more to be done on security, because right now our people are still not feeling safe and secure in the country, to answer the first question. Then the second question about as this administration
has delivered on its
promise on security. I think if you check records, if you check the number of casualty in the last 7 years and the last administration, if you pull side by side, is it better? Do we have lesser number? The answer is no. We have more attacks, more casualties, more property damage, more people being kidnapped in this administration than the last one. And what this administration is supposed to do, according to their promise, is to make things better than the last administration. So if you are not doing that, then you did not deliver. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's just simple logic. You get, if I am wearing a shirt and I'm still feeling cold, and you are telling me that, oh, don't worry, I'll bring a jacket for you, it's supposed to help me with the cold, Abby. So any other clothes that you are bringing for me, if it is not helping the cold that I'm feeling, then you are not doing better than what I'm already wearing. You are not doing me any favor. You are not doing me better. You get. So I don't think they have delivered. They have not totally delivered us from the insecurity that Nigeria has been facing. And I'm not saying insecurity started from this administration. I remember during the Goodluck Jonathan era, the whole bombing, you remember the Chibok girls, and blah blah blah. So I'm not saying that Buhari's administration that it started here, insecurity started in this administration. I'm just saying that let's pull up the numbers, let's pull up the statistics. I'm a history guy, I'm a statistics guy, and if you allow me, I can start pulling up numbers and statistics and history. Is it better now than the last administration? So they have not delivered on their promise. It's as simple as that. Now the last one is, how do we move on? How do we solve this? You see, where the world is now in 2023, where the world is now, this 2023, this is not 1988, 89, 1990, 1991, 1992. This is not then. This is not the late 80s. This is not the early 90s. And you get, I remember when I was growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, we used to see policemen carrying baton. You know that thing? They call it Kodo Olopa. You get, that's how they secure the country, the city back then, with baton. It is enough for security, and they do stop and search. You get, they will search you, they will search your pocket, they will say you should open your boot. You get, the 504 of those days, the Volkswagen of those days, they will ask you to open your boot. Things are changing now, a lot different now. You can't secure a city or a country with baton again, with simple stop and start. The world is going digital. It's all about tech. So Nigeria, we have to evolve. We have to move on. That's how we move on, by adding tech to our security. You get, we have to do that. I remember the attack in March 2022, the Abuja Kaduna attack. You get, it took them that attack and several hostages and a lot of undisclosed millions of dollars for them to realize that they need to accept the use of drone to secure the train
and infrastructures.
And infrastructures. You get what I'm saying? So it is medicine after death. How do they say that statement? You get. So it shouldn't take us that long. It shouldn't take us mistake, error, casualty, money for us to realize that it is tech world. We have to move with the world. We have to accept tech and use tech to our advantage now to secure our lives and property. That's number one. Number two solution is security operatives. There's no father, there's no son, there's no big brother, there's no junior brother. They need to learn to work together. Synergy. That's synergy. Police, soldiers, NSCDC, vigilante, whoever, whatever. As long as you are a security outfit in Nigeria, learn to work together. The common goal is to secure lives and property. There is no need. I have heard cases in Oyo State, for example, or let me say Southwest, that there's something called Amotekun. You get, it's a local security outfit. I've heard cases
out of desperation to even secure states.
Yes. I've heard cases of Amotekun maybe apprehending criminals and delivering criminals to police. And police will say, no, now catch them now. So go and find solution to it. Now that's not supposed to be so. They don't want to work with Amotekun. Police will tell you, we don't want to work with Amotekun. Now their problem. But why did you? They will ask you as a citizen that,
Why didn't you call the police? Why did you go and call Amateku? Hey, you called Amateku instead of us. Hey, let the Amateku solve the issue for you. It is not supposed to be so. The relationship is supposed to be bigger than their own. Oh, I'm the big brother. I am bigger than you. I'm the junior brother. They should work together, make things work for the common good.
So lastly, elections will soon be here. What are the other areas that we need to solve? Or what are the areas that needs to be quickly addressed before we even go to the polls come February 25?
Oh, in a couple of days, we'll start having election. And the number one thing is orientation. I think INEC should work with other media agencies. Should work with you, should work with me, should work with advocacy group, should work with radio houses, should work with influencers to make sure that people are aware of what election is about. I mean, the bedrock of democracy is election. Some people think we just they play. No, we are not playing. This is democracy. So election is important. People should be aware how to vote, what to do, what not to do during election, during voting. People should be aware. They should sensitize people. You know, I said earlier on that the mindset of people. So if you keep saying something, if I tell you, okay, that this shirt you are wearing, it is actually white. But if I tell you it is black, believe me, I just have to say it often enough. Yes, you start believing it is black. Yeah. You get. So if you tell people about the importance and how necessary this election is, they will start believing in it. And before you know it, we will start having a better voting culture. You get. Yesterday, they said 240 polling units. That's 240 different wards in different areas. Mm-hmm. And we will not be voting. Why? Because people didn't register at all. They don't have any voters there. You get. Which is a sad thing. It's a terrible thing that people in some communities, they didn't even register at all. You get, it's because they don't know the importance of voting. So that's the number one thing that we need to do within these few days to election. It is not too much. There's nothing like INEC is working with too much agencies or media houses or influencers or journalists. No, there's not too much. Let INEC do this job in the absence of NOA. I know there is NOA, but I'm going to go with my statement that in the absence of NOA, INEC should work with independent agencies and media houses and journalists. That's number one. Number two is our security operations. They need to come out more, give us the sense of safeness, let us know that things are safe. You get, give assurance, us that assurance. Thank you, assurance. Give us that confidence that things are going to be fine. They are capable, they are doing well. We have also police officers ready, armed to do their job, to make sure everything is safe. They have so security operative. They are using drone. They have so tech gadget to make things work. I mean, give us that confidence, because if people are sure that's how everything is safe, the security operatives, the police and all, they are on top of the situation, you give them that morale to go out to vote, knowing that if I go out to vote, I will come back home in one piece. You get. So that's the second thing that we need to do a few days to this election. The third thing and the last thing that we need to do few days to this election, which is very, very important, is to understand candidates, understand different candidates. You get, it is not just enough to know that, oh, it is election time and people are out. Do you know who you want to? Do you know these people? You get, know about them, know their antecedents, know what they stand for, know what makes them tick, know what makes them turn. You get, know the cocoa of that person. Don't just vote because the person is a Muslim. Don't just vote because the person is a Christian. Don't just vote because the person is a Yoruba. Don't just vote because the person is an Igbo. Don't just vote because the person is Hausa. Know why you are voting. Know that person and why you want to vote for that person. This is very, very key and very, very important. Make the election issue based. Yes, you get, not because Baba Yemi Bubuga, that he sound, he is very,
he has clapbacks.
Yeah, he has clapbacks. it shouldn't be about that. Let's do better.
Man, thank you very much, Mr. Adeyemi, for joining on this episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And hope to see you some other time. I really enjoyed this, and I'm hoping to see more of this engagement.
Definitely, 100%.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it on this week's episode of The Insider. Thank you so much for listening, and please stick around for more exciting episodes. Also, subscribe to my channel from wherever you listen to podcasts. Shout out to my sound engineer, Tom Lucky Media. Until I see you next time, I say stay lifted.